Welcome to The Inevitable, a podcast by Motor Trend, presented by Volvo Cars.
Folks, it's time for The Inevitable. Put your hands together for the one and only Ed Lowe and Johnny Lieberman.
Woo!
All right.
Yeah. Hi.
Hello there.
And
welcome.
It's not just about us, because
we're joined
by the woman of the hour, I think it's safe to say, Bogey.
Bogey.
Yeah.
Hi.
Bogey from All Girls Garage. Bogey from the Motor Trend channel. Bogey of decades of experience in the automotive industry, and who also debuted a very special car here only moments ago that we're going to talk about. But yes, let's welcome everybody who is watching, who's in attendance. Thank you. Who's watching on our YouTube channel, on our site, who is listening to the podcast via Podcast One. We're all over the place. We're excited to be here. This is our very first recording of a podcast, of a vodcast, live out of the studio.
Hope it works.
It's going
to
work.
I'm desperately checking to make sure that the thing's actually running.
Well,
and that we're recording.
Let's have a cheers for Bogey, because
we'll
that car was super cool.
Oh, thank you. Cheers.
Congratulations.
Cheers.
I was saying, I'm proud of you. I hope you're proud of you.
Thank you.
That was pretty cool.
Thank you.
So,
and what we're talking about.
Yeah,
let's
get right to it.
Yeah.
So it's about 12:30 right now. This is day one of SEMA. For those of you who don't know what SEMA is, it is the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association. It is a big, big, big trade show, industry show, wink, wink, because there's a ton of people here who I don't think have any. I'm just kidding. This is
I saw Magnus Walker walking around.
Well,
he's
legit.
He's in the industry.
So.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He's legit.
Oh, okay.
This is a big, big trade show. It's gone on for decades. And to have a car here is a very big deal. To have a car debut here inside a booth is a huge deal. To have a car debut here inside a booth tied to a major car manufacturer is basically the brass ring. And Bogey did all of that. But it didn't come easy.
And more. Hang on. I want to say something.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've been to SEMA. But SEMA is typically a lot of dudes walking around the cars they built in flat brim hats and half naked girls handing out like press kits. Bogey pulled the wraps off of her Volvo, and there was a bunch of girls in flat brim hats pointing out the welds they did, where they ground down the metal, where they wired this up, and I'd never seen anything like it in this industry. I've been doing this professionally 17 years. I've never seen that many women ever doing like that, and instead of just, you know, dressed up and looking pretty. They were actually like, It was shocking for me to see. I was really,
and they look pretty doing it.
They look great. That's not what we're here to talk
about.
That
is not what they're here
for.
Yeah,
and again, I was just like, wow, like this should be how it is. This is now how it is,
right.
And it's taking way too long to get to this point, and it needs to get bigger, and more of it. But it was it's one thing to know I was going to see it, but to see it was like, oh my! I've been to a million shows where the car, you know, the wraps come off a car, and they have like five or six guys standing in front of it taking the pictures. There was like six women, 30 women, however many.
We had a lot of ladies.
So I thought it was a very big deal, and I thought it was very cool.
And well, so that was a long introduction for Bogey. So welcome, Bogey. Let's get into it. What you did here, but. Thank you so much for joining us for part two of our interview on The Inevitable Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome hanging out with you guys. I had so much fun last time. We had to do it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So you're our first return guest, by the way.
Ooh.
That's true. Yes.
And you came all the way to SEMA to come check out the unveil.
That is true. Got up really early this morning.
4:15 in the morning.
Oh, I feel so honored. Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Well,
I'm leaving as soon as this is done, so let's get on.
She might be kidding too, because I feel like your journey here was much more arduous than ours. This is a project that was actually years in the making, right? Because of the pandemic, because of various things. So could you give us just a quick recap on Iron Maven?
Yeah, absolutely. So Iron Maven, for those that don't know, is a one-off custom vehicle. It was the third all-female build that I've led at my shop. It's a 1961 Volvo PV544 that we've body swapped with a 2019 Volvo S60 hybrid. So kind of a totally crazy project in and of itself. Very ambitious, very advanced and challenging and you know, if we didn't pull it off, it would have been stupid. But since we did, it's stupid awesome. But more interesting, I guess, and compelling is that it was an all-female build, which is women all over the country coming, whether it's for a day, a weekend, a week, a month. Women traveled from as far as, you know, Alaska and other countries, in fact, to come and participate. And we had over 150 women all told. About 30 to 40% of them had very limited experience. They're either hobbyists or total newbies, maybe didn't know what a wrench was when they started. And then the other 70% are all women who are in the profession, in the trades, in various capacities. So really unique and challenging in a lot of ways, and so much more about the community than it is about the build itself, although the build is pretty crazy.
The build is crazy. And for folks who don't know and who walk around here, because there's a ton of really cool and really crazy stuff here, Johnny might tell you, you know, some of the stuff is maybe, you know, shouldn't be here at all.
Fantastic. It's all fantastic. Right. What are you talking about?
But the...
don't look at my Instagram.
But when you look at, and you know something about the car that she started with, the 61 PV544, and the size of it relative to the 2019 S60 Recharge, which is a plug-in hybrid, which is a modern vehicle, modern safety standards, crash standards, the amount of widening and lengthening and, like, building out of the vehicle... is ridiculous. Yet when you see it, it's not obvious at all. It looks seamless. It looks like a show car, because it is a show car. But the
it looks French in the best way possible. Curvy,
right?
But like small, but not a micro car. It's very elegant.
She curvy. Real curvy.
It looks like also honestly with the it looks like a. Like the late 40s, early 50s Alfa Romeos, like the 2600, very beautiful, elegant cars, and it kind of had that from the front.
Interesting,
had that look.
Yeah.
It's because of the big fender, which you needed to do. My understanding is you guys wanted to keep, I mean, easier for you of this very difficult build if you kept the powertrain dimensions, the driveline and stuff as close to stock as possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. People were always asking, did you cram that engine in there yet? Did you cram the engine in there yet? Well, no, we built the car around the engine. So we kind of, like, we knew we had all of the parts and pieces of the S60 that we wanted to keep. So we had the drivetrain, we had the engine, the rear electric motor, the suspension, the brakes, all of that. We wanted to keep as much of that as we could. So we basically cut down the car down to that and then started fitting pieces of the PV to it and customizing and modifying as we went to make it all fit and work. And really stylistically, you know, the vision for it, you know, I had a rough idea in my head, but so much came out of just necessity. It was like, okay, this is where this fender has to live. These are the dimensions it has to be. How do we connect it and make it reasonably attractive in the process?
And I think that was, for me, that was the real, the giveaway, the tell, if you will. Like, so you were at the BASF paint booth, and very cool color, which we'll get into in a second, but they pulled the wraps off this thing, and Ed was like, oh, it's got a giant wing, because the hood was open under the cover.
I was making a joke.
Yeah, no,
I was
no,
like,
no, no, no.
I was like, Calvin Dutchie.
Ed jokingly said, Calvin, yeah, sorry, yes, that's what he said. But
we thought about it.
Then I sat there for 5 minutes staring at that, you know, it's a transverse four-cylinder, but, I mean, it takes up every millimeter of that engine bay, and I'm like, that's wild.
And more. There's stuff that spills over under the fenders, right? Because stuff that existed in the S60's engine compartment, there was no room for. So there's a lot of stuff had to be maneuvered and moved around, which makes for some challenging service stuff in the future. That'll be interesting.
But, you know, that term, like, all ate up with motor, I mean, there's that's the tightest fit.
Well, you drop a quarter and you never find it.
No, yeah. 100%.
Right. Okay. So, but when we first talked, this was it 6 months ago?
Something like that.
Where were you? How far away were you from this point?
Oh gosh, we weren't in paint yet. We were just getting ready. We were in like the first round of crunch mode, right? So the first crunch mode is getting it into paint. Second crunch mode is getting it to SEMA. We were in that first round of crunch.
And you knew the color at the time. You kept it secret.
We knew.
From us.
Well,
yes.
You had hadn't you just finished the online competition in terms of because it was a crowdsourced color.
So we came up with three different custom colors, and myself and the woman who painted it, Connie Mangiavinos, so she and I worked on the colors together. We put it out for everybody to vote on, and we just blindly let it be decided by the masses.
And what's
they
the
picked
name?
Right.
What's the name of this color?
It's called Rebel Berry.
Rebel Berry,
which looks like a almost like a purplish. It's kind of got, it's like an aubergine, I think you were saying.
Yeah.
It's the Porsche aubergine PTS color. It's really close.
It's, well, it's a gorgeous color. It's got a lot of red to it, so it's not like a typical, we think aubergine, we think kind of like that deep, like deep, Barney deep purple, purple right? Like the purple purple.
No, no, it's but Porsche, this, yeah. The Porsche aubergine. Okay. Like, yeah, it's got some interesting crimson.
Okay.
Is your hair?
Yeah. Is your hair a tell? Did you do
no,
that?
No, my hair has been this way for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because Ed was like, I know what color it is. Look at her hair.
That's
what and I'm like, you don't know anything.
My hair has been purple on and off like since my high school years.
Okay. So everybody should have guessed.
Right. Well, yeah. My shop is purple. Like everything is purple.
Now, what were the two colors that didn't make it?
So there was a light kind of sage green that we named She Is Sage. And then there was this kind of gray that had a little bit of purple hue to it, tiny little bit of pearl. And so that was resilient gray. And all three of the colors actually do show up on the car.
Okay.
Oh, interesting.
And the interior?
No, just in random little bit. Like the calipers are the green. Up front in the grill where we have the front camera housed. Like,
I love the grill.
Yeah, thank you.
I got to say, out of the whole thing that I saw, it was a crowded booth.
It was a crowded
booth. We didn't have a lot of time. But I was just staring at the grill. I was like, that's really
right?
good.
Right? That is my favorite part of it as well.
Cool.
Like, she's got this great smile, and it just really, it was one of those things where I had this thought one night. We were trying to figure out what are we going to do with the whole center section of the grill. And I was like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could make the original S60 grill work. And it was like that middle of the night delirium. And the next day, it was like the first thing I did was like run and find it in the shed of one of the parts. We said, we're not going to use this. And then it just worked. It just worked.
It's so cool because, you know, so the PV544 is 1961. Volvo, they had the Volvo symbol, but that they didn't have a modern Volvo grill, obviously. And I saw that, I'm like, that's just the coolest thing.
So you use the grill mesh basically from, and because the opening, if you need to go Google this car, Google Bogey PV544.
Just put it on the screen. Yeah. We don't have the technology.
Aww. We do. They'll be cutting to B-roll as we speak.
There you go.
The magic of video.
The magic of TV.
These fine folks.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's in the air, guys.
Yeah. It's right there, yeah.
But it's got a hood opening, a grill opening, probably about 5-6 inches. 6 inches tall.
Yeah.
Maybe
a little taller, yeah.
Maybe 2 feet long.
And
and you were able to actually utilize the grill from the S60.
Yeah, there. So we broke it down, like we took the trim ring around it off and the housing and the plastic and the this and the that. We did wind up painting it to mattify it a little bit. But we wanted to be able to use
what I thought looked so good, the way you painted it. Because the Volvo logo is not black. It's like a gray.
Correct,
awesome.
They might not like us very much because we modified it a little with some color. So we added the green to the Volvo, and we wanted the front camera integrated. So an easy fix was to use what they'd kind of integrated already, and we just had the challenge of how do we make it work in the car. So, yeah, trimmed it down, created a flange that went all around it. That whole center panel is actually the first fully, like, from scratch panel that I've ever made. From nothing, from sheet metal. And couple of the other women in the shop were also instrumental in making that happen. But, yeah, it's kind of cool. I get to look at it and be like, that was my first.
I'll just tell you that Volvo's probably going to be fine with the recycling that you did.
See?
Because
yes.
They're going after circular sustainability. So
there you go.
Right.
You want to reuse.
We did a lot of reduce, reuse, recycle on this build, I tell you. We scavenged the pile of, like, refuse parts, like the things that we weren't going to use. We had a pile out back. And it was literally every day they were like, oh, you know what we could use? Oh, yeah, we could steal this bracket from this thing, and we can reintegrate this. We could use this armrest as a door panel. Like, we did all sorts of craziness. There was a lot of, fun.
What I liked about it, the grills, still on that for a second, is that it had the term is OEM plus. So, in other words, you made a modification, but it looks quality level. It looks to be the quality level that a manufacturer would put out, not a SEMA build. You know what I mean? Like, no, it's really.
He's got
good.
Strong feelings about SEMA, doesn't he?
No,
we are
we'll
on speaker to everybody here. That you're insulting.
I mean, we'll
talk more about that one later.
But you know what I mean? Like, it was. I was stunned by that. I was just like,
thank
that's
you.
Really, because when I heard what you were doing, I'm like, okay, I know what it's going to look like. It's going to look like a fat PV, but you made something new and different and super, super high quality.
I'm very
impressed.
And to go back to what Johnny was saying, like when he didn't get a chance to look at it completely because right after the sheet drop, and you were like the last reveal. So
yeah,
I think
like five cars were revealed.
Five or six cars there,
yeah. Five total.
So you were the last, and you were basically mobbed. It was very hard to get around. And you actually said you got a little emotional.
I got a little emotional.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Bogey's feelings first.
You don't talk about mine. Just saying it was very cool moment. I'm glad I got to be.
So is it more than just like the, I mean, this was 3 years?
Yeah, officially. We started it officially right before COVID and then got shut down, right? So okay. it kind of, a lot of false starts there. But it's been a couple of years. It's been my baby for a couple of years now. These builds are so massive, and I try to explain to people, and it's impossible to until they experience it. Like, I don't really see the car until it's all done. Like, I'm working on it. I'm there every day. I'm looking at it. I'm seeing each step of the process, but I rarely get that opportunity to step back and see it. So SEMA at the unveil is generally that, like, first time where I get to turn around and look at it and be like, okay, wow. Like, we really did it. It came together. Somehow all of the disparate people and the disparate hands and all of the stuff, like, came together to make this magic happen. But where the emotion really came from was I turned around at one moment. I was gathering the women together to do a photograph. And I turned around, and they were all there already. And they were surrounding the car. And it was just this group of, I don't know, 30, 40 more women who had had hands on the car. And I started to talk, and tears came out. And I was like, this is, wow. Just to see that many women, I'm so used to being like an only in my career. And, you know, obviously I've met more awesome women, but to turn around and see that, I mean, like, we've got some of the ladies here, like, they're welling up right now just watching this. Like, it was this overwhelming moment of, like, that was power. It was really powerful.
Girl gang, indeed. I mean, you roll deep. Like, I was commenting, like, wow, look at all these t-shirts that everybody has. And it says, if she can see it, she can be it, right? Which, yeah. I think is kind of encapsulates the maybe some of that emotion you're talking about.
And we talked about that, you know, last time Bogey was on, was that, you know, for me, growing up, I was reading Motor Trend. Actually, I was reading Car and Driver. I was reading, you know, Motor Trend. And I'm like, oh, look at all these, like, white guys that are reviewing cars. So, like, there was no barrier, mental barrier. Yeah. And it was really important. And just so everyone knows what a big deal you are, because, like, I don't even know. I was talking to a couple of the women that were around the car. And first of all, they were like, I did that, which I thought was so cool. Like, I did that well, you know. But then one of them was like, yeah, I went to UTI because of Bogey. And, yeah, it was just cool.
Went to a trade school, and picked up and learned more about the, inspired by the process. So, you know, it really does bear mentioning that in the BASF booth where this debuted, there were a bunch of other cars. But as I was telling Johnny when I was there, like, look at the crowd around Bogies.
Yeah, no one was looking at that Dodge 800. You know,
I always feel kind of bad.
Or the Porsche, the GT3R, which, you know, hey, that's
just a race
just a Porsche.
Those are like everybody in the booth. They're incredible builders. They build incredible cars, and I always feel so humbled to be in the same vicinity as them. I'm not a builder, but I guess I am at this point. Yeah, I've done three, but I didn't start out that way, right? I was a mechanic, and I always feel so humbled. And then when there's that huge crowd and this overwhelming, like, throngs of women, like, I feel a little bad for everybody else in the booth. I'm like, sorry, guys.
No, it was cool. And the other thing was, I noticed a lot of our female colleagues, other, you know, female journalists, they were all there. I was just eavesdropping.
A lot of them actually wrenched on it, too.
Yeah.
So I think Emmy
and Lolita.
That's what I did, was I was leaning over Emmy's shoulder, just eavesdropping. I'm like, ignore me. I just want to hear what you're actually saying, you know. And no, I did, because I just, it was, and again, they were so passionate. I've never seen women do that before.
And it's a thing that's hard to explain, right? Yeah. Like, why does it matter? Why is it a big deal? Like, being an all-female build, what's that about? And I've had people ask me, like, why would you have so many different people work on a single vehicle? That had to be so complicated. Like, it's not about the product.
Right.
Like, the product's cool, right? But it's not about it. It's the process, and it's all the stuff that goes into making it happen, those connections, those relationships. And there is something really magical where that pride comes from, because for the women involved in the build, for myself as well, like, it's not just a car. It's an opportunity to show, like, that we're capable. To all the people who our entire careers have told us that we're not and that we don't belong, and to have that energy and to see all of those women, for so many of us, I think, was that moment of, like, validation and belonging.
So we've done a lot of celebration.
These three, by the way, there's three of them that are crying, and I keep looking at them and tearing up. So.
We've done a lot of a celebrating of the vehicle,
yes,
of Iron Maiden. It's now time for some real investigative journalism.
Okay,
though.
Yes, ooh, okay, yes.
So,
I'm ready.
A lot of SEMA builds, they might look like they run and they move under their own power. I was not here for roll-in. tell
the Bluetooth
us. She does run.
Okay.
She does run. Now, full disclosure, we started her for the first time like 2 days ago.
Wow.
So, you know, down to the wire deadline-wise.
Test in two is yet to happen.
Yeah, we did the first startup. She was up on jack stands, and it wasn't until, like, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning the next, like, later, where I was like, you know, we should probably, like, put it on the ground and start it, make sure it actually, like, rolls and drives, not just turns on. Like, cool that it runs, but we should check the rest of it, too.
And so, and it was plugged in the booth, because it is a plug-in hybrid. Is, as far as you know, is that system
that
all
working? That system is all working, yep.
Wow.
Yep, that system is working. Honestly, it's I'm pleased to say we do have fault codes. Obviously, the dash lights up like a Christmas tree when you start it, but the vast majority of the codes are, like, it's not seeing the front park distance control sensors.
Right.
It's not seeing the rain sensor, the gas door, right? It's like, oh, your headlights are out. And we're like, yeah, duh.
Modern car stuff that you could easily
Every single one of the cars within our eyesight has
exactly.
the same issue. Yeah.
Exactly. Although the difference when you're working with a new car, right, is that when it sees some of these faults, it says, ooh, this is dangerous. We should stop the car. So I'm pulling out of the driveway to go get on the trailer, and it sees something in front of me, and it's like, ooh, scary, danger, shut the car into park. I'm like, it's got all these, like, self-controls doing its own thing, safety stuff.
And especially Volvo, they're going to be extra safe.
Oh, yeah, the safety.
If your belt's not on, if the door's not shut, park.
Oh,
park,
absolutely.
Park,
your hood's up, open, we're shutting you down.
Right.
So,
yep.
But can you talk about, since we're getting emotional, talk about the...
Ed hates emotional.
The turning of the key... Like, how many times before it turned over? Were you like super nervous, or were you like, oh crap, it took, you know, so long?
Yeah, is yes and no. It's interesting. I to this day, 24 years as a mechanic, you do something really involved on a car, and there's still that moment of gut where you're like, ooh, when I turn the key, what's going to happen? But this was interesting. I felt reasonably confident that at least the electronics and the engine side of things was going to work. The big challenge in this build was not as much on the electronic side, it was much more the fitment, making things fit kind of side of things. So I felt reasonably confident. We also had a technician from Volvo, a young female tech, who came out, who is actually, she's not so young anymore, but she has recently gotten promoted to their technical support side of things. So she came out, she was helping out, and kind of we went through all the checks on the computer. We made sure the hybrid battery was charged and charging, and that all of that was working, and we all gathered around and we started it up, and I think that first moment was like, it's quiet. And we're like, oh yeah, that's right, it's a modern car.
Right.
Yeah.
So now that Iron Maiden has debuted here, let's talk about sort of short term. What else are you doing here at SEMA? You're going to do a couple panels for us and other things.
Yep, I'll be around all week doing a couple of things with MotorTrend. I've got a couple of other little companies I'm doing some signings with throughout the week. I'll be over at the Apex side talking with some companies over there and filming some stuff for Tech Force Foundation.
Okay.
And then I think that's it. We've got a little celebration party tonight for all the builders, so all the ladies will get together and cheers to our successes.
Nice.
What happens to the car after SEMA? Right.
That's a fantastic question. So right now, it's going directly home to Phoenix, to my shop. We've got some things we want to button up and finish, as always with a SEMA build.
Of course.
And then we're probably going to lay low for the rest of the year. Personally, I need to sleep for like a month. So December is going to be like, I'm checking out.
I mean, we're in November, so it's officially like, let's revisit this after the holidays.
Exactly. Like, let's talk 2023. So there's a lot of plans in the works. A couple of my different corporate sponsors and partners, we're talking about different ways that we can tour it around to trade schools, other ways to use it as an activation to get young people interested in the trades, and women in particular, obviously. Okay. So there's a lot that's in the works. We'll just have to see how that unfolds.
So this isn't the end. This is the beginning.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it really is. And now that we have time to breathe, there's more time for us to start sharing some of those videos and images of the different parts of the project and how we did the different things, so that we can share that. Because during the build, you're just too crazy.
So this might be too early to ask, but everything sounds like it went flawlessly. No problems whatsoever.
Right. No fighting.
Would do this all over again in a heartbeat. Is that true? Or do you have everything like, man, I really shouldn't have or I wish I picked an easier car or like no.
I love a good challenge. I wouldn't have traded the car or the progress or the project. I love that. It was a ton of fun. I think the hardest part is the deadline. That's the hardest part of it. If we had all the time in the world to be able to hang out with these incredible women and to work and learn and grow and figure things out and experiment, and I would do this nonstop if I had somebody to pay the bills for me.
But that's kind of the thing, right? Like SEMA is like the deadline every year.
It
for
is.
People.
It's the deadline.
Because if you didn't, right. People would just many of these project cars. This is not their first time here.
Correct.
They keep coming back and in improved in different iterations.
Yeah.
So well, let me ask you this: aside from more time, is there anything you would have done differently?
Oof.
Or that you will do differently next time?
Will
there be a next time?
I honestly don't know that there will be. Not of this magnitude.
Okay.
I do plan on continuing to do projects, smaller scale projects. But this was huge, and as much as it fills me up. Like, everything about this process, these builds, they fill my heart, they fill my soul, they are just absolutely amazing, there's so much good that comes out of them. And they also, I leave at the end of them exhausted, 10 years older, verge of bankruptcy, it's a passion project that kills me, and I love it, and it kills me simultaneously, so I don't know. This was the go out with a bang.
We'll check in January.
Just
give it some time.
We'll do some smaller things, but yeah, definitely.
But I've also talked to a lot, not only myself, but a lot of people where something big happens day of, like, done. February, March is like, that was a lot of fun. You know what? We could do it bigger.
I know, but that's I always equated it to like having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have a baby, but I hear people talk about this, right? It's like, you spent at the beginning, you're like, oh my God, this is so exciting, we're having a baby. And then about halfway through, you're like, this is awful. When is it going to be over? And then, pregnancy, sorry.
One week to go.
Right.
One week
by
to
the
go,
end of pregnancy, you're like, get this child out of me.
My wife
I'm done
was
with
so
this.
Over it.
Whose idea was it, right?
We were just real quick aside, we went like Halloween trick-or-treating last night with our kid, and we're walking by our old house we used to live in, and my wife's like, hey, Richard, do you want to see the spot where at the exact moment I decided to have an epidural?
Oh, Jesus. But much like having children, right? Like,
yeah.
It's that pain of it. It's awful. It's horrible, right? And then a few weeks later or a few months later or a few years later, you turn around and you look at your cute kid and you're like, oh, let's do it again. We can have another one, right? That wasn't so bad. Like, you forget about all the pain points.
Yeah.
And you
just
remember all the good stuff, which is how I'm on build number 3.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so
but,
there you
but
go.
Back to the original question. Is there anything process-wise, car-wise, you do substantially different? Was there a bottleneck? Was there some pain point?
Money is always the pain point, right?
Yeah, right.
This is entirely self-funded, so to have more corporate support.
Oh, I'm sure Volvo would write a bigger check if you know.
We should ask them, right?
Yeah.
But, so yeah, that's
hey,
always
Volvo.
The thing.
We probably hear somewhere.
they're like, shut, cut the feed.
They're right, definitely right. Listening.
Enough of this. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Okay, aside from that, yeah, okay. Yeah, but money, that's a legitimate thing.
That's the big thing. And more time, right? Because it's hard doing something massive like this, an all-female build. You need that momentum. You need that short time frame, right? But at the same time, doing something like this in 2 years is insanity.
Right.
Absolute insanity. I've had several builders say this to me already. Like, you are stupid. Like,
right. Well, I mean, and it's not just the project itself, but the way you did
right,
it and wanting to involve so many people, as you mentioned, 150
and
women.
Rank amateurs.
And including amateurs who know nothing about it.
That's a lot
so
of
it's,
time.
Yeah, it's a, you know, end of the day, it's the you, it's really the process and the,
yes,
not so much the product, although the show and this event, it's you got to show the thing off.
Right, right. No, absolutely.
Interesting. That was a curveball. I wasn't thinking that this would be Bogey's last ride. I mean, I was thinking maybe a full electric vehicle or something would be coming.
We'll see. I'd like to always have a project going. I just don't want to have this kind of deadline for it. You know, if it winds up going to SEMA Cool, but if we have a build going on at the shop, I still want to keep that energy going, right? Women coming in from all over the country, working together, figuring things out together. Tackling projects where none of us know what the answer is, and we're all like, okay, well, like, it's science day at the shop. We're gonna try some experiments, and we're gonna F up royally, and hopefully somewhere along the line we'll figure some stuff out. That's fun. I want to keep doing that, you know?
This build was fascinating to me because I've seen a lot of, you take an old car, you make it an EV. But I haven't seen you take an old car and you make it a hybrid. Like, that's it's got to be
well, because why, like, unique. Why make things easy for ourselves?
Right, right,
like,
right.
Let's make it as complicated as we can be.
Two powertrains.
On the plus side, you know, we thought at the end, even if one of the systems didn't work, at least we'd still be drivable in one of the other systems.
You know, I was just going to say.
It was our failsafe. No, it was not intentionally right.
If you wanted a slightly easier project for the next one, you could just go full EV because it is literally fewer moving parts.
Yes.
Things are smaller.
Two moving parts.
Right. You got a motor, you throw some batteries.
So much room for activities.
Right. Yeah. So then it just becomes more about the creativity you want to, how deep you want to go.
But also, that's a great point. I was, years ago, I was driving a Subaru hybrid around Iceland. We were crossing really deep, much deeper than they wanted to, rivers, and the hybrid system just shorted out.
Oh, geez,
but we still had a gas engine. So it's like, hey.
It's your backup plan.
Yeah.
It's great. It
totally works.
It's great.
So, so let's say that we'll revisit the conversation about project cars with Bogey at a later date. But after your spectacular holidays, a bit of a break through Thanksgiving and Christmas,
30-day nap.
And of course all the touring you're planning with Iron Maiden. But what else what other projects are you working on?
So, you know, there's a little bit of it's kind of time for a rewriting of things a little bit. I think in my life. Trying to create some space for some different things. I've started actually doing some consulting with some of the manufacturers, doing some consulting with Volvo with their mentorship program and their new technician program. So hoping to do more of that. And part of what was so cool about this build from kind of a big picture standpoint was some of the changes that Volvo's kind of initiated within their organization to kind of address this issue that I'd brought to them around women in the trades. And they've taken action, which is really cool, and they're reaching out for some guidance on that, which is great. And they're listening, and they're doing, and that's phenomenally cool. But it's given me this taste of, okay, this is awesome what I've been doing. It's been a lot of fun. I get to, you know, be a part of a lot of women's stories and their lives and their challenges and successes. But like, can we take this a step further and really make some changes within the manufacturers and how they do business and how that experience is for women in the trades coming up?
I mean, outside of the direct connection you've made with the women on the project on Iron Maiden, do you feel like you succeeded in other ways in sort of driving awareness, or have other companies or other sponsorships come out of this in the shape of driving more awareness or involving more women in the field?
I think so. I think there's kind of multiple pieces to it. You know, you've referenced the shirts, like the "if she can see it, she can be it." Like, there is a lot of, and I hear it all the time, women who are saying, "Oh, because I saw you or the women in the build or the build in general, it inspired me and gave me the confidence to go try it myself." So there's that piece of it. But I think really where I see a lot of changes start to happen is when the men who have shops or our service managers or our, you know, whatever it is in their shops, they see the build, they see the women, then they go back home, and the next time they encounter a young female technician, they're more open to it.
Right.
And so I think we start seeing that change happen in that way. And then similarly, you know, with Volvo kind of creating this female technicians forum to connect the women that they have working for them and saying, yes, this is a real issue. We didn't realize that women in the industry really do need, they need some support. They need to feel validated. They need to feel welcome. And by providing that additional support, we might actually retain them in the industry and help them succeed and grow and thrive. So the fact that they're doing something about it, that's my die happy stuff. It really is.
And it'll make Volvo better. I mean, I always say.
To 100%.
Like, turning off half the population, you're missing out.
Well,
you know, so.
100%.
Let's, okay, back to Motor Trend investigations.
Yes.
Let's, let's call them out. Like, okay. We'll play good cop and then bad cop. So Volvo's covered, right? Like,
yep.
they invested in you and your program. They helped involve their own techs,
yep,
as well as people you brought into the mix. I think BASF,
phenomenal.
They made a home for your vehicle to debut. They talked a lot about their involvement on the female side as well.
Yeah,
I'm not aware of any other sponsors. Who are the other sponsors?
So one of the other big ones was Stratasys 3D Printers.
Okay.
So we worked with them, which was really cool, as well as Women in 3D Printing, which is a nonprofit organization of, you know, women who are in the additive manufacturing field. And so there's a lot of work with them. And so that was a really phenomenal thing as well. We had a number of great sponsors step up and really express their commitment to supporting and bringing more women into the trades.
Okay. Now we play bad cop.
Okay.
based on your long experience in the industry, you've seen, because we talked about this last time, you've sort of seen the bad, you might have seen some improvement. Now, you said 24 years as a mechanic, where is there still a huge gap? Like, what are there specific industries? Mm. You don't have to call out companies, although it would be super fun right now to name names.
It would be, but I won't. I'll restrain myself.
Right. If it's them. It's
like, or inside, anybody inside? Booth number what?
But
how about how about categories? Dumbs. Is it like, oh man, the guys, the guys who work in the tire business really need a talking to.
Is there specific category? You're not going to like this. So, it's not actually. The magazines are actually getting better. They're probably the leaders in this because I think it's become like not okay, or became not okay much sooner in print than it has in like real time for a lot of the behavior that's not okay. But it's kind of automotive mechanical as a whole. So through the Iron Maven and through the all-female builds in general, I'm working with welders and fabricators and painters and body techs and all of these other different kind of adjacent trades. And it's the mechanical side that is by far the most lagging.
Still, right?
Still.
Because it basically hasn't changed. It's changed a little bit.
It changes in pockets, right? So I will talk to women who have experienced amazing support and amazing shops that are welcoming and inviting, and where it doesn't matter whether they're a male or a female, just are you willing to do the work? Are you interested? Are you eager? Cool. And then it's the polar opposite when you talk to somebody else, where they've had zero support, nobody will give them a chance, they've been told outright, we don't hire women, that's not going to happen, or they've been sexually harassed
or treated
poorly. Oh, gosh.
Hire women?
Oh, yeah, I've had women point blank be told I would never hire a woman to work in the back of my shop, ever.
It's like the military used to be, right? It reduces operational effectiveness, right?
Right.
It's a distraction.
I mean, it's a distraction.
35 years ago.
Right, but people still, so it's pockets.
Yeah,
so there's areas that are awesome. And so you get these really disparate experiences from women. Like, some will say, I haven't had any issues. And then others are like, geez, like, I'm thinking of giving up because this is too much.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it a big city, small city? Is it a regional thing?
I've been trying to pinpoint that. And I don't know. I really don't. I think sometimes the bigger cities are more open and more progressive about having more diversity within the shops. And then sometimes it's the smaller communities where it's like, you know, you're in a farming community. It didn't matter whether you were a boy or a girl. You're helping fix that farm equipment because you got to get that thing harvested, right? So it becomes, it's different. I don't know exactly what it is.
I was talking to one of the fathers of one of the women at your booth. And he was like, look, I have six daughters. I taught them all, like, you know, how to work on their cars. I told them you don't need a man. And only one of them now is working as a mechanic, and I'm disappointed in the other five. And I was like, really? You know, that's interesting. So I was wondering, like, do men with a lot of daughters or more open?
Yeah, again, it goes
or
both.
Or this guy could have been.
Again, it goes totally both ways. Yeah. I talk to women all the time who say, I've always been interested in cars. My dad always told me I wasn't allowed to.
Right.
And then on
the flip side, you have
the dad saying, like, I want to teach my little girl how to do this, or I'm disappointed that my little girl isn't interested. I get asked all the time, how do I make my little girl be interested in cars? I'm like, that's not how that works.
Well, that's one of our colleagues. I can name drop him. Scott Oldham, big, big car guy. And he has two daughters, and he's maybe three. He's like, they don't like cars. I take them to NASCAR. I take them to the drag
into it.
They hate them, and it drives them crazy.
It's easy.
Right.
Just withhold love.
Oh, Jesus. That got deep, quick.
Right. Wow. Well, we can talk about Ed's mom on the next show. Oh, wait. Sorry.
But to be clear, so we're talking about primarily automotive auto tech mechanic shops, basically hiring the women to do the actual greasy part under hood, under car.
I think there's just still a lot of holdout of old mentality of they don't believe it's possible because they haven't seen it, and so there's this belief that women can't do it, that they're not really interested in it, that's just going to be a fleeting interest.
And
there's just a lot of old mindset that has still really stuck around. And then a lot of it, too, comes from purely just not really thinking about it, right?
Right.
They, like, oh, I didn't even think about the fact that we don't have a locker room that has a lock on it.
But again, this is why it's...
Or uniforms that fit, or...
But your motto, you know, she can see it, she can be it, it's so important.
Yeah.
Just, not only she can then believe it. Yeah.
Right.
So absolutely.
Well, so this is really an unfair question for you. And so I'm not going to pose it that way because, you know, if anybody should get a pass on trying to think of more solutions for this, it should be you because you have. No, I mean, you've been on All Girls Garage, right? You've been sort of pioneering this side from the entertainment side, but then also putting your passion and your money and your business where your mouth is and doing your own garage, just your own business from the very beginning, employing women, and then moving on into this much bigger realm outside of the entertainment piece. I'm talking about three projects, women, you know, behind all of them. If you still feel like there are like huge pockets where there's more work to be done, what else? What's another big idea?
Yeah.
That you might have had. You're just like, but that's gonna be, you know, somebody else can do it because I'm tired.
I think it's exposure and it's time. So much of it, we can do these big broad strokes for change, right? But really, it comes down to individual hearts and minds. And the more individual conversations we have and interactions we have, and it takes time, because no matter how big of things that we're doing, there's still, you know, most people have no idea who I am or what I do or why it matters or what this all female build thing is. So even 98% of the people here at SEMA probably have no idea. And so there still is that lack of exposure for what women are capable of and are doing in the trades. So exposure is a big thing, I really think. So thank you guys for helping with that. I appreciate
it. Hey, our pleasure.
Well, no, I mean, thank you, because you're doing it, you know, at the same time as, you know, entertaining people, still doing, you know, the shows that you do, and then doing these big projects that are getting a lot of exposure for all of us.
I have a question, and this is sort of back to like what's next. Have you thought? And again, I really spend a lot of time looking at car design. It's kind of one of my passions. Have you thought about doing more design work, like just based on what you did on that front end of that thing? Because it really is.
I appreciate
like,
that.
Well, you're welcome, but like that doesn't happen by accident, you know.
I'm a very like instinctual designer, if you want to call it that. Like, I'm not trained in any sense. I don't know angle. Like, seeing me struggle through designing my own hood hinges, like, there were some beautiful mind moments. I'm on the floor with paper and stencils, and I'm like, I wish I knew I'm sure there's a formula for this, and I don't know it. So I'm drawing and I'm measuring, and like, I am not, that is not me.
But you can learn all that.
I'm just that person who says I think it can fit.
Well, like, not to take away from the design, but I think some of this was really form-following function, right? Like, you were constrained by
that's what design
this.
Is.
Yeah, and then trying to make it pretty, because the PV, I love the PV, but that is not an attractive car from the get-go.
It's wide and flat and old,
but like, just in its native form, the PV is like, what happened to your front end? Did somebody sit on you? Like,
right.
What happened?
Right.
It's not attractive. And I knew from the beginning that was going to be the biggest challenge.
I'm glad we're finally talking about this, because I'll be honest. When I first heard you guys did a PV544, I was like, well,
why?
To be honest, I Googled it, then I was like, why?
The only good one, there was like a rat rod one that lived in my neighborhood that was like, you know, black wheels. It was primered, slam, chopped. And that one looked good, but all the rest, you know, of it's a real fuddy-duddy.
Anybody who knows Volvo and you say, oh, they did a concept car, and it's the P, you're like, oh, P1800. Gorgeous.
P1800 is beautiful. Right. P-V544, no. Maybe not so much. Yeah, it's a different P.
Did you get to pick? Were you involved at all, or did Volvo just say, hey, take this?
No, we actually had the PV544 that we were in the process of restoring before Volvo came on board.
I
approached Volvo. They actually wanted me to do a P1800 instead.
I was going to say that would make more, a little bit more.
That's what they wanted.
I like this better.
But I like the underdog cars. Yeah, I like the goofy ones that nobody knows what they are. They walk by and they're like, what is that?
Right. It's not so obvious like bringing a Mustang or a Camaro to SEMA.
Right. Well, and that's the point. It's that
you mean a Bronco.
It's the conversation starter. Right. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, these doing these cars is, it's so that we can talk about it.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's honestly, a big coffee table book. The last time I saw any media on a PV, there was a movie of that. It opened the day that, I forget which one, Norway or Sweden switched from right to left-hand drive. And there was a lot of sobs and PVs, like, having to, like, everyone was confused and they had to drive on the wrong side of the road suddenly. And, you know, that was
Is that when they got
movie.
Their reputation for off-road driving?
No.
Because apparently the PV was, like, a good rally car. They were used in rally cars.
They're the best because they have permanent winter for half the year. You know, I mean, it's like, No daylight. All right. No, nothing melts for 6 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're all, you know, the best rally drivers come from, well, Finland.
No, but the PV itself was known as a good rally car.
Yeah, sure. Ah, rear drive, you know.
Yeah.
Red tires, good to go.
Right. So I didn't have my notes in front of me. I did want to ask you a question. It's a little awkward.
Uh-oh.
No, that's fine. I'm king of awkward.
And, he you, really
and you've
is.
Been great, and you've been great so far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we talked a little bit about this in the first episode, especially because Johnny's been way up in front on media for Motor Trend on YouTube in particular, and has dealt for many years and has now made sort of a running joke about the type and quality of comments he gets on the content he does.
Oh, you mean that YouTube's a streaming video service built atop a sewer?
Right,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, when we did our first episode of The Inevitable with you, we put it up on the site. We put it up, obviously, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify for the audio people. And then for video, it's hosted on our YouTube channel, which has 6.7 million subscribers. There were some comments there that weren't particularly awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you felt the need to tackle it head on. And which, you know, I'll be honest, I have very mixed feelings about. I've been in a position for a while where I, you know, have some input into who gets exposure on what platforms, and I feel protective of the female staffers that we have. There aren't too many, but when they're up there, like, there's always, and it's a terrible thing that I have to say. Like, we have to say, well, you know, we'll put it up, but we should turn the comments off, or. Well, we'll make sure that our comment moderators.
Right. The fact that we have to think about that.
At all. Exactly. So I just wanted to flag that because, hopefully people who are watching right now might think twice before they do anything. But also just.
They won't think once.
They won't think once, right?
That's the issue.
But yeah, so do you want to. I don't know if you want to touch on that.
Yeah, my favorite of the theme of those comments on that post in particular were these, like, I don't believe it. Sexism doesn't happen in the automotive industry. It doesn't happen. This isn't a problem. She's making this up. And I'm like, really, white man?
Right.
You know about what the experience of women in the industry is. That's cool.
Right.
That's cool. Like, it was just this incredulous fact knowing, like, right. You are lying. That doesn't happen.
Right. Right. Okay. I can see how. I mean, it's essentially you totally 100% getting mansplained too.
Oh,
right?
God.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And being called a liar for saying that it's challenging for women in this industry, like, and or saying that maybe, and this is my favorite, like, maybe there aren't more women in the automotive industry because women just aren't that into cars, right? Because I've heard this from a sponsor that I courted. I had this project idea that I wanted to do. I thought it would be a great fit for this particular company. Reached out to them about it. And he's like, we just don't have that many female buyers. I said, do you talk to women buyers in your audience at all and in your advertising at all? No, because they're not interested. Well, that's why they're not interested, because you don't freaking tell them about it.
Right.
Like, you're not talking to them.
Right.
So how do you know if they're interested? How do you know if you're going to like cars unless you get a chance and opportunity to play with cars? You just don't know. So using that idea of women just aren't into cars and that's why there aren't that many women in the automotive industry, BS. I call BS on that.
Oh, it's absurd.
Right?
Yeah, it's absurd.
Expose all men and women. Expose all little boys and little girls to the equal things, to the same things. Expose them all to everything and let them pick what they want without any restrictions or barriers. Then, if still women don't choose automotive, then cool.
That's excellent.
I believe you.
Excellent parenting advice.
By the way, I mean, I could bring my friends up here. They don't know what a car is. My guy friends,
right?
They have no idea.
You know?
It's not all guys like cars.
Yeah.
It's some guys, pretty small, you know, proportion of the population are really into cars. You know what I mean? It's not like it's some, like, you know, you're male, therefore you like cars. Not at all.
And there are,
like,
so many women who have always wanted to learn more.
Yeah,
and have not had that opportunity, or have been literally held back from it, right? My parents' generation. My mom wasn't allowed to take auto shop in high school.
Right.
Like, sure. That wasn't a choice.
Sure.
It just wasn't allowed.
And,
sure.
and as the mansplainer was basically telling you, like, when you deny somebody's lived experiences because you don't believe it and you feel like you're right, or you don't market to people directly, it's just creating, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. 100%.
So Like, it's ridiculous.
It goes back to what I was saying, though. I mean, it's insane to not advertise to 100% of the population.
Right.
If you really are a capitalist and you really believe you're gonna sell stuff to everybody,
sell stuff to
everybody.
Yeah.
Don't do this like, this is all we're ever going to be.
Well, and that's where the science comes from, right? We talk about companies are more successful when they have diversity, right? It's been proven time and time again that the more diversity a company has, the more successful they are. Because a lot of times, some of these companies are not, it's not that they're not advertising or marketing or speaking to women because they don't want to. It's because there's no women in their organization and they just don't know how to.
Right.
Like, they just don't know.
So when you
add more diversity to your organization, you now have the ability to speak to a more diverse audience, therefore making your business a stronger business. Ergo, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you mentioned, like, your mother, and there is a sort of a generational aspect to this, and I look across this audience. I look across our staff. I look across the people, our colleagues at work, and it's always the, and I'm probably going to tread into some HR stuff.
Right now, this is fun. This is getting juicy.
No, but like, just I know that the younger generation is so much more open-minded about a lot of stuff.
Everything
to some pain at some points. Like, let's talk about how much we all make.
Sure.
Like, let's not talk about that right now. That's really makes a problem for everybody.
Yes, that's problematic.
But, you know, I was thinking, like, boy, this sounds like something that could be solved just with time, but it doesn't happen by itself unless
some
of the exposure happens and people are leading the way and giving opportunities
to
a generation.
It takes work, but it also does take time because change never happens as fast as we want it to.
By the way, Justin Bell is taking a photo of you right now.
Oh, no. Hi, Justin. You should be on here.
Hi. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. You're not on mic, Justin.
Right.
We'll have to show you how these podcast things work out. Host of the Torque Show, ladies and gentlemen, Justin Bell.
So we went a lot of places. We did some investigative journalism. I like that. But I want to make sure we end on a happy note.
Oh, okay.
So we've talked a lot about your sponsors. We've talked a lot about the folks that helped the project along that made it possible for you and the team to get here. How about individual all-star contributors?
Ooh.
Are there any
girl gangsters
like that you want to call
gangstars.
Out yeah gang stars you want to call out in particular? And this is going to be a tough one because you will invariably forget somebody and just feel terrible afterwards.
I know there's so many,
so let's caveat that to say, you know, you can't thank everybody. But are there folks in particular that you think, like, wow, really deserve mention for help with this project or others just along the way?
Yeah, there's so many. And obviously every single woman who participated in the build is part of making it happen. But my core local team is, like, they can't go without mention. Like, they are there. You know, out-of-towners will come for a week, maybe a weekend. Sometimes they'll come out two or three times throughout the year, and it's intensive and it's amazing. And they all, I love every one of them for their own reasons. But the local team who comes out, like, sometimes two, three, sometimes four or five times a week, especially during crunch time, like, their heart and soul is in these builds just as much as mine is. There's my right hand sitting over there, Zena, who has been kind of by my side on this build since right around when we were conceptualizing getting the S60. So she's been, like, really involved in it. I as invested in it as I am. My admin, Monica, who was involved in the build as a builder and then became part of Girl Gang officially. Just, there's so many. But the local gang, they're like our ride and die.
Okay. I like that. And because knowing our audience is like 98% male.
96.3.
I don't want you to call out any... I'm going to assume, but please correct me if I'm wrong, that you might have had some male advocates along the way that were super helpful. You don't need to name them, but please call out some specific qualities of... what it means to be an advocate for this kind of stuff.
And that's a great question.
I appreciate the men out there listening how you can be more supportive and helpful.
I appreciate that so much because there's so many different ways. You know, we either get told we shouldn't be in this field, or we get over-doted upon, like, oh, you're a woman in the field. This is amazing. You're a woman. Yay, we're going to put you on a pedestal. And neither of those are good. I have this one mentor in the industry who's been kind of a supporter since the first build, and his behavior is perfect. He's a teacher and he's a girl dad, so he has that in him naturally, right? But he comes by, I call him up, I say, hey, I'm up against the wall, I don't know what to do with this thing. He comes by, he's like, all right, let's work through it together. He gives me some tips, and I'm in desperation sometimes, and I'm like, all right, like, when you just do it for me, because you clearly know what you're doing. And he's like, so here's the paint gun, and this is what you're going to do. Or I said, well, how do you think we should approach this? Right? So he doesn't make a big deal out of the fact that I'm a woman. He supports me. He supports what I'm doing. He would support me regardless. But he's not taking it from me and doing it for me. He's explaining. He 100% has confidence and faith in me even when I don't. I think that's the biggest thing. And that so many women who come out to the build express is having somebody just trust them implicitly and believe that they can do the thing. Right? So when...
Full-fledged membership.
Yeah, so when you're a dude and you have somebody that you're in charge of mentoring and a young tech, whether male or female, comes up to you and asks you a question, like, to be able to confidently say, like, you got this, like, you know the answer, right? And not in a, like, in an obnoxious way,
right.
But I have full faith that you can figure this out. That's huge. It's the confidence in somebody. Those are all beautiful things.
That thank you. That super resonates, especially for me and my wife. She won't listen to this, but she will recognize that my biggest problem, and I think this is a problem for a lot of men, is that you instantly want to move to problem solving.
Right.
Like, I'll take care of it. And it's like, you don't, a lot of times when a problem comes up, you're just supposed to listen.
Right.
And just, you know, help in that you're helping by helping the person be heard,
yes,
be seen, acknowledging that there's an issue. She didn't ask for help directly in solving it per se. Now, if that does happen, then kicks in the other device, which is you don't have to do it for them either, but you can show.
Right. You can explain. And that's where mechanics are even worse, right?
Right.
I think, like, men in general get that bad rap of, like, oh, we're going straight into solution mode.
Right.
Mechanics, like, that's what we do.
Right.
Like, oh, here's a problem.
Physically,
let me fix it. Let me jump in and diagnose it and fix it. I catch myself doing it. I'm like, oh, I see what it is. Let me just jump in and do it. And I have to stop myself because, especially when we're on deadline. When we're on deadline, then everything changes. But
I mean, I saw that, like, you know, I drove Pike's Peak this year, and I had a crew chief, awesome guy, Jason Schmidt, but he had a lot of younger guys that, you know, he said, like, do X. And, like, you know, they tried to do X. And when they couldn't do X, he would say, this is actually how X is done. But he trusted them enough.
To go do it.
To go do it, yeah. And it was. And they were much younger, you know, like college kids type thing. Yeah. And, that is a good way to teach.
It's the easiest thing to do, right? That's part of the trick or the fallacy of wanting to be the problem solver, because it's like, here's the car doesn't start. Well, let's start the car, right? Like, let's just get it done. Let's not actually worry about teaching somebody
how to figure it out.
Right. It's like, you know, give a man a fish, give a woman a fish, right? Teach a woman a fish.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. How to be a good mentor? Believe that they have every right to be there. Treat them with respect. Give them the opportunity to learn and to grow. Give them the space to mess up. And acknowledge when they do mess up that it's okay.
So not around the deadline.
Yeah, right. And validate. Like, everybody makes mistakes. I think that's a really big thing. I was talking with a woman recently, and she said one of the guys that she works with, you know, will act like he's never made a mistake in his life. And how validating it was for her to hear from me when I was like, yeah, dude, I messed up like 4 times this morning. Like, she's like, oh, you mess up too? I'm like, yeah, we mess up. Like, that's what we do. Like,
sure.
That's life, man.
Right.
So,
well, This was great. I'm really glad that we got a chance to actually do this. And, you know, we had such a great time when you came in studio. But that feels, I mean, we've done now, I think, probably 20 episodes in between, Johnny and I.
At least.
Yeah, and it feels also kind of like a long time ago. I know for you, right? It's probably like both seconds and years, right?
Totally.
Added to your life, but also how quickly SEMA came around with this project. But it's really amazing when you can talk to somebody and that they're promising something amazing and they're not done with it yet, and then you can show up a few months later and it actually has delivered and it's beyond any expectation. So thank you. To all the women, all the people involved, all the sponsors involved in Iron Maven.
And, like, thanks for doing it. What a cool thing.
Right. Thank you.
That's why you got to do another one.
We'll come back to that. But
I want to thank you guys
for having me on and helping share the story and for having me on a second time and for coming all the way to SEMA to see the unveil, to see her in all of her glory and to sit down with me again. It's just fantastic. And you guys are awesome.
Beyond welcome.
Right. Motor Trend fan. So thank you again. And if you guys are listening or you're watching, you want to know more about what we're talking about, you can go to motortrend.com, check it out. Just go to Google right now, type in Iron Maven PB544. That's probably the fastest way to see the beautiful vehicle in all her resplendent Rebel Berry color. And thank you so much, Bogey, for being here.
Thank you, guys.